Now, if you have children with you, just a word of warning that we are going to talk about a very sensitive issue surrounding child abuse. So I just feel I need to give you that health warning, because this week on LBC, I'm talking to a number of different people about how we deal with the problem of child abusers and paedophiles. Yes, imprison those who are an active immediate danger to children, but for how long? Yesterday, the National Police Lead on Child Abuse, Simon Bailey, said we cannot arrest our way out of this problem. So what about therapy? What about treatment? David, who receives such treatment, told me what he remembers about first being attracted to children.
It's a complicated answer in some ways, because as quite a young child, I went through abuse of various sorts, so which develops some sort of attraction from a very young age, because it seems to be that children of your own age, say 8 or 9, if you've been abused by people slightly older, say 14, 15, whatever, suddenly that becomes an acceptable group of behaviours, even though you know it's wrong, because you keep it secret, you don't go telling everybody about it. But there's an element of excitement by it, as well as fear around the whole thing. So from a very young age, there was some connection across younger girls. So
was the abuse that you experienced from older children?
From older children, yeah. It wasn't adults. It was older friends, effectively. And at the time, I wouldn't have, not until very recently, the last 10 years, I would have classed it as abuse. I just assumed it was what kids did. As it was, they were older kids. It wasn't something I opted into. As I said, I didn't find it horrific. I didn't find, you know, I wasn't at that time. At times it was scary, at times it was fun, and I just assumed that's what you did. So even as an adult, even though I recognised then that it wasn't appropriate, I didn't see it as abuse. And it's only lately I'm realising, obviously, that's played a part in my whole psychology going forward.
In developing your sexual self.
Exactly, yeah. So those sort of developmental times, and a number of other things. That's not the only thing. There's a whole group of things that get together to sort of build some sort of psychological profile that you're stuck with, whether that nature and nurture are combining. I don't really know the science around that. Pretty much, yeah, that started to be an okay thing. So as I was getting older, I thought about those things in a way that would excite me.
So as an older boy, as a young man,
yeah,
you never shook off that attraction to 8, 9-year-old girls?
No, and even though they were boys that were doing it to me, my attraction has always been to girls as opposed to boys. But nevertheless, that sort of, and my predominant fantasy, I'm more hebephilic. It's teenage girls more than prepubescent girls generally, in terms of the fantasies. But that all built up through the same time, because it was going through school. These are older guys that you're meeting girls of your own age. I was a long haired, specky, and attractive kid, a bit of a swot, from a very, very poor background. So all these various combinations together, I didn't have a girlfriend, but my other friends had girlfriends. But I remember being found attracted by boys earlier on, and I couldn't quite understand why girls wouldn't find me attractive now. So once again, this is only in retrospect, thinking about these things obviously quite deeply over the last number of years, that I've started to identify all these various bits that came together to create the attraction.
I was going to ask, did it frighten you when you started to twig that you were persistently attracted to girls? In a sense, you've answered it by saying that it was only relatively recently, as an adult man, that you've started to untangle it all.
Yeah, to untangle the source of it all. But I was a part of a big group of friends. We'd make very un-PC jokes about these things as groups of, especially that then, and that was the 70s, sort of jokes were made around jailbait and various things. So I just sort of assumed that it was something that I would kick off, because everybody was making various commentaries about it. But I didn't kick it off, you know. All my relationships have been with adult women. I was married for a long time. Unfortunately, I had a lot of affairs, but all with appropriate adult women, even though the process was obviously wrong in itself.
And you have two children.
And I have two children, yeah, which I'm very close to, you know. I'm close to, but I still know their friends that were children at the time. we still got very good relationships.
How much do they know about
everything?
Really everything. And their close friends know everything as well.
And their parents, presumably.
And their parents, yeah.
And how did people react?
Badly, understandably. Yeah. I was successful. I was outwardly reasonably attractive. I didn't seem to fit any of the stereotypes that people imagine. And it's difficult to use the words as well, because the word paedophile is quite specific, which even though I have paedophilic tendencies, I don't quite fall into that. I'm attracted to adult women, in just the same way. So it's a difficult one to play with.
But you're a child abuser.
I've physically not abused any children, but I've sanctioned the abuse of children by viewing images.
When did you, or try if you can to describe that moment when you realised that viewing abusive images of children makes you party to the abuse of that child in some way?
I don't think I've ever been foolish enough to assume that it wasn't the case, to be quite honest. You do tend to be able to think on a number of different levels. My natural inclination is liberal, is left, it's feminist, all the things that completely would despise this in any shape. Everybody should, but I mean, by inclination, those things are already there. But the attraction was still there. So as much as everybody would see me as somebody that would fight against all sorts of sexism, discrimination, any of those things, to actually then see that same person willing to allow children to be abused for my own satisfaction is...
I think you've said something interesting there about, because... From my conversations about and with people who abuse children over the years, it doesn't have, child abuse doesn't have political colours, it doesn't have social colours, it doesn't have gender colours, it's not a form of discrimination, yeah. It's a crime, and so it helps that you've just said that, because that really needs to be nailed, doesn't it? That this isn't something that is part of the life of a particular type of person.
No, or class, if you look at, in terms of the preponderance of this, it's quite a lot of upper middle class type offenders. Especially, it seems, and I don't know if this is just apocryphal or not, it seems to be the non-contact offences. There's a lot of people, teachers, etc., at are non-contact offenders, whereas the typical prison system is full of the disenfranchised, the poor, the often the underprivileged, the mentally ill. And yet that
with less to lose, maybe.
With less to lose, maybe, yeah. And part of a different society, not part of a general society. But a lot of people involved in these types of crimes don't conform to those stereotypes.
Tell me about the moment you were uncovered, arrested, charged.
There was a raid onto the house. The police, lots of them, came in. My girls weren't there. My ex-wife was there.
You had no inkling that they were onto you?
No. But bear in mind, I'm a repeat offender. So, there's not just one offence, three offences, one was a breach, but two proper offences. So, it's completely horrific. In a way, there's a number of things going on. One, you sort of in the back of your mind are expecting it at some stage, oddly. But that's not enough to stop you doing it. Another part of you sort of says that they'll never catch me. There's all these various things going on in your head. Because unfortunately, the problem you've got once it becomes an addictive trait, mine is I compare it much more to an addiction in terms of a compulsive behaviour. Something which has to be managed forever. So however much when you're feeling... In a good state of mind, believe that you've put all the things into place. It's very easy to, something will happen and you hit that, and without you even realising it, you're back into offending. It takes, for me, it's taken years each time to do that, because you tend to completely convince yourself that you're going to be okay, and then perhaps let the barriers down and realise that you're not okay.
That it's intrinsic.
Based on, once again, whether this was developed as a child or whether there were some inbuilt predispositions prior to that, I don't really know. It is only one part of me, which is important to say as well, because, you know, I've done lots of good things and lots of things, but this horrific thing is a significant part, because if it's an impact, obviously, on others, you know. But yeah, it's there. So the only way really, for me, and I would suggest any individual to manage it, is to accept that this is something you're going to be, you're going to have forever. It's not, you can.
And get help.
There's no cure. There's no, there's no way out of it. You just, get help.
Well, I stopped him at that point and we discussed the impact on others that he spoke about, and how his family handled it. That's coming up after this break. It's 2:45. All week on LBC, we're looking at the issue of paedophilia and child abuse, and specifically what can be done about the behaviour, the offending behaviour of so many people. David is a man in his early 50s who's been imprisoned for viewing child abuse images. And he has explained to us not just where he thinks his feelings come from and what has happened to him, what he had, the way in which he has offended. He spoke to me as well about the impact on the people around him when he was caught.
The answer to that is relatively, as you would imagine, a complete shock and horror. The thought of my girls being involved in something like this is horrific. But once again, it's not something that stops you in the moment. These are all hurdles that you put it in the way. But when that feeling is so powerful, you jump the hurdles, unfortunately, and which is why it seems to be akin to, in my experience, an addiction.
And is the desire to see these images, is it more powerful than the sexual desire that, I'm going to use the words, well-adjusted adults would have for one another? So when you're physically attracted to a man or a woman, you know, we all know what that feels like.
Yeah.
Is it, and it can be very powerful and it can be very overwhelming, falling in love, being attracted. Does it engender the same kind of feelings in you, or is it different?
It's very different, yeah. It's not even the attraction so much at this level. The fact that, not the rationales, but one of the reasons that these things come up, you look at the profile of my life when they happened, and they've been extreme stress, insecurity, those things. And that's quite consistent with many, many people. So you're looking for some sort of escape. You disappear into this world, which is horrific, but safe in an odd sort of way, because you're in control of this situation. At the same time, you recognize, you know, that they recognize the stress it's going to involve later, but none of these things, none of the logical things come into play. So, and then the searching from an image point of view, a child abuse image specifically, it becomes the search for more and more horrific images. It's not even so much the attraction to the images, the search for the more and more horrific takes over that. So be able to get away and that whole exercise, you just blot out the rest of the world. That doesn't mean this, the only time you'll do this is when you're feeling this way, because once you've built those neural pathways over many years, you know, you're at risk of offending at any time. I went with a member of family to Gamblers Anonymous, because they were a bit nervous and they had a problem, and I was trying to help them sort it out. Well, I went there and sat there for the first time to help the person get in there. And when they went through the process, it was a type 12 steps type thing, but when they went through the process, you could see it was exactly the same. There were people from all walks of life. There were people who were, they're on bingo casinos.
When you say it was exactly the same, you mean the...
Yeah, the compulsion to do the thing. So, unfortunately, you know, having these sort of inclinations are far more destructive to a wider group of people.
We'll choose our words carefully here, but what you describe there is that the search for, you know, worse and worse images, more and more abusive, more and more harmful images, from the child's perspective, that's nothing to do with attraction, is it, or sex?
It connects into the attraction, obviously, but I'm not sure if it, because sometimes the images are not sadomasochistic. They may be younger children. They may be a specific search for a particular look of a child that you, as long as you've got something to aim at, you can mine for that.
Like a challenge almost.
Yeah, while you're mining for it, you know, you're away from the real world. You know, as you said, there are the sadomasochistic images are quite dominant in there as well. And you get driven down that, you know, that horrible path.
You don't sound like a man who makes excuses.
Well, no, there's no excuses, but also, yeah, you've got to say it as it is fundamentally. You know, there can't be any excuses, But this is the reality. I didn't, you know, I was a successful, happily married man with a fantastic family, driving around in fancy cars with lots of friends. There's no logical reason for me to do this. The gain is, obviously, the loss massively outweighs any gain, and the damage is huge. None of that makes any sense. So I didn't choose in any way.
But you have made a choice now, haven't you? You've made a choice to work on the choices you were making.
I've always made the choice not to do it, but I've been unsuccessful in fulfilling that choice. Mm. Because of the compulsion. That's been the problem.
The new relationship you're in, when did you tell this woman about this part of you?
Very, very early on. We met, which seems counterintuitive. We met on an online dating site, which is counterintuitive based on the situation, but also based on how difficult it is with this to meet people.
Had you had relationships before that had failed the minute you told them this?
No.
I'd
imagine most people would, and I would understand that. With my current partner, we met a couple of times for coffee, and I had the conversation before anything else happened. I just couldn't go through the process of, she is a lovely person, and I couldn't bear that. So I thought, well, let's get this sorted now. Either it's not going to happen or it is. Obviously she was shocked. She disappeared for a week. And then made contact again. And yeah, you know, we sort of worked through how this whole thing works. And what I need to ensure that I don't do this again. You know? This is where obviously I'm here because of the organisation Stop So. That's where that sort of helped. Not that I've had, as many people have, direct therapy, but being able to be in a safe space with somebody that understands the process and just having that conversation, and as an insurance policy to know if I need to run off somewhere, I can go and run off to Stop So. It helps enormously. It's not, like I said, it's very difficult. I don't know how much this you want to take this program into, but I did the core SOTP offender program, which is completely useless, as demonstrable by all the
sex offenders treatment program.
That's it. All the latest research
that it's not working.
It just doesn't work, and actively, even though I don't think it's statistically relevant, possibly you're worse off after it. So you've got all this, which you're sort of forced to go through
in order to get parole,
if you're in prison. If you're outside prison, there's nothing. You might do a community course initially, but there's very little, and it doesn't work anyway. So it really is a catch-22. But to feel there are people out there generally trying to put things together that may work, generally, you know, the one-to-one sessions are far more beneficial than any badly conceived group session, as these have been so far, well, for the last 20 years, whatever. And organisations like Stop So, and there are others, I believe, out there, but I think they're the one that are really pushing it, make a big difference.
But there's a long way to go before there's a long way to go before the general population of this country will be relaxed about NHS money being spent helping people who have the same kind of tendencies.
I agree. A long way to go. We're part of a society which that would be very difficult. I suppose it's ripples, isn't it? It's this sort of process starting because the bottom line is that you could fundamentally just send more sex offenders to prison with longer sentences. You could do all those things. But at some stage, 99% of people come out of prison and become your neighbour. So, you know, it's not really a way of reducing victims. Short amount of time, somebody's away from potential victims, but for the large amount of time, they're back and potential offenders. And the other problem is that because you mentioned we're in a society where you mentioned the word paedophile, sex offender, rapist, anybody to do with a sexual crime, understandably,
people flinch away.
Yeah, it's a visceral response. I have it myself, you know, counterintuitively. I have it myself just the same. They're horrible, and they're to do with the most vulnerable people, and that's a horrible thing. But unless we have that dialogue, unless society starts to start thinking about it, we're not going to solve the problem. Because we're not going to solve it by just, you know, screaming and going crazy every time somebody's released from prison. There shouldn't be, or somebody's kept in it should be. There should be a long-term dialogue
With those people?
With those people. Because it sounds trite from my position, but I'd like there to be a lot less victims. And there won't be a lot less victims if it just stays stays in the pot. It needs to come out and be discussed.
What's the worst thing about this being part of your makeup?
Well, the worst thing, I suppose the honest answer to that is the destruction of my own family. Now, that's my, I've been party to the abuse of lots of children. Okay, I've not physically acted upon that myself, but I viewed images of children that have been abused, so I've been party to that. And that's very difficult to live with as a reasonable human being. If you're an unreasonable human being, or if you've got certain psychopathic tendencies, then you may be able to accept
that. You feel
that.
Sorrow, do you?
You're sad all the time about that. You can never not be sad. And the line you have to walk is that self-loathing itself is quite destructive. And, part of the process of trying to heal yourself in order not to offend again is to recognise that you must loathe the actions, loathe the feelings, not loathe the rest of you. I've simply have self-loathing all the time, and it's a management process for that. And that's forever. You can't lose that. I don't know. Once again, this is just supposition, but I'd imagine that many, many people who have committed sexual offences of the nature of mine, that non-contact and potentially contact offences, have the same sort of self-loathing. I can't imagine in any way feeling good about yourself when you've got any sort of inclinations like this.
That was David, who spoke to me a few days before we came on air. Dion has texted from Langley. He did so at the beginning of that interview, actually. I'm sorry, Sheila, but being someone who was abused in my early years in the 1970s, I find your topic quite disgusting, says Dion. And I can understand, Dion, how you and many other people listening to David would find it difficult to hear somebody talk in the way that he did, and even hear me asking the question, is therapy the answer? This isn't about not punishing people who commit crimes, Dion, and anyone who feels like Dion. But I think what David said there about the priority of therapy isn't really for the person receiving the therapy. It's to reduce the number of victims of child abuse. It's to mean that there are fewer people growing up with this horror in their lives that stays with them throughout their lives. David mentioned the organisation Stop So, one of the very few organisations in the UK working actively to stop sexual offences using therapy. They work with sex offenders and people who admit to having a sexual attraction to children, and as well as families of sex offenders as well, that David described so well. Their chair, Juliet Grayson, thinks we need to radically change how we respond to paedophiles and treat them more, treat many more of them. You'll hear from her tomorrow on LBC at 2:30. The news now at 3.